The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Paul McCartney is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, Burger King, Carey's Fabric and Uniform Store, Commonwealth Bank, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, NUA Insurance Agents and Brokers, Ross Electric Motors, Sunshine Insurance Agents and Brokers Limited, and Wendy's.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name's Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. All right, a little later in the show, in the second hour, we'll be speaking with Boost Academy. For now, we're going to be talking current affairs. There's a couple of things that occurred. I'm not going to talk about this thing all day, but there are a couple of things that occurred while I was off last week. And any week around here, who knows what the hell's going to happen in New Providence or the Bahamas for that matter. It's a lot of wild stuff goes on. But we had the murder, and I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't speak about this, and I won't speak about it too much because there's been an arraignment in this case. We had the murder of Omar Davis Jr., a young man who just graduated from university. He was going to go do an internship, I believe it was, with Deloitte in Atlanta. He came from very challenged circumstances. His father was killed. He says in front of him on his porch when he was just a child. And he struggled to get out of the ghetto, as he said, some people termed it, and be the first in his family to graduate from university, immediate family anyway. And when he got a scholarship from the Ministry of Education, he gave a speech about his father and where he came from. And it was so inspiring to me. I believe that was 4 years ago that I played it on the show. And I was talking with Jeff Lloyd, the former Minister of Education, about it at the time. And he was like, this is the model for how we bring young men out of poverty. This is the model that shows you can be in the worst of circumstances, father killed, mother really can't help you in terms of your education, but you can still overcome, you can still achieve with this system that we have in place. And I knew that to be true already. Is it easy? No, I would not say that, but it's possible, it's doable, all right? If you're looking for easy, I don't know what to tell you. My mind has never been on easy. I understand our history. In this country, our history, the majority of our people, and what we've been through, and easy is not something I'm expecting. Easier than what came before, I would say, I would like, but I don't ever expect easy. So I don't expect to have an easy life. All right. I don't pray. I think John F. Kennedy Jr. had said this, or he was referencing someone who'd said this before. And he was speaking at a graduation ceremony of a military academy. And he said, do not pray for easy lives. Pray to be stronger men. And I've always thought about that, just witnessing the world around me growing up. All right. And when things would get rough, I'd go, it's not supposed to be easy. All right. What you've got to do is become stronger, work harder. All right. Is that fair? No, but that's what it is. Was it fair that our ancestors were shackled and chained and brought across an ocean, the majority of us? No, that was horrifying and a travesty, but we've made it through. All right. So I don't expect easy. It would be great if that were the case, but to expect it is naive, all right, to me. So I expect that if you're strong and you work hard and you persevere, that you can have success. And that's what Omar Davis Jr. showed us. And his story was a compelling one. And I don't mean to diminish the significance of his death at all, but just this year alone, we've had 90 murders. I doubt anyone out there could name me 5 people who have been murdered this year. All right? 5. Name me 5 people without Googling who've been murdered in the Bahamas this year. It's a difficult task, isn't it? Because the names wash away. They become numbers no matter how hard we try to document their stories, no matter how many families we speak to, no matter how many funerals we follow up with. It's very difficult to keep track of all the carnage that is occurring. And so the murders tend to often wash over you. 3 people killed this week. 6 people killed the other. But we don't know their name. You couldn't tell me who's been charged with the murders. Not 5 of them. You couldn't give me 5 names. Doubt it. Imagine, give me the names of the people who were charged with their murders. You couldn't do it. And that's where we are as a nation. We become accustomed to it. And there are stories like Omar Davis that are so compelling that often it causes us to pause and go, how does this happen? Now, the reason I'm not going to get into too much of it is because I don't know what happened. I know the circumstances under which he was found, dead, stabbed in the trunk of a car in a trash bag, which if you break down the components of all of that, the horror is compounded. And it sounds like, and I don't know what the deal is, that sounds like a crime perpetrated in extreme anger. All right? To stab someone, particularly repeatedly, is a much more personal thing, rooted in anger, who knows what, you know? To repeatedly stab someone and then to take their body, put it in a trash bag, and put it in the trunk of the car, it just speaks to something particularly heinous. And here's my thing. I don't know what happened. I'm not going to assume and guess, but I'll say this. I've heard a lot of people say, well, where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? And I've told you before, man, listen, since I've started doing this, all right, just since I started, there have been nearly 2,500 people murdered in the Bahamas, okay? Since I started doing this. Started in 2007. Let's say about 2,000. Just to not embellish. Since I started doing this, there's been about 2,000 people murdered in the Bahamas. 2,000 murdered. Now, I've had the outrage going on, and my own cousin, Kurt McCartney, was murdered. And I want things to change, and I want us to do stuff, but there's a point in time in which we're going to have to go, outrage ain't gonna serve no purpose. Like, what is gonna change if we sit on here and express this deep-seated outrage about Omar Davis's death? We could speak about the tragedy of it. the senseless loss of life. But A, I don't know the circumstances of his death that led to his death. And therefore, I don't know that outrage does anything except make me feel better. Let me let some steam off. Help you to let some steam off. Let me say this, and this is why I'm not going to chance to try to even get too deeply into it. I think if you're saying that this is a community problem that led to the circumstances of Omar Davis's death, and maybe it is, I'm not sure. It seems to be someone he may have known or someone who may have been monitoring him at the very least, but I don't know. But anyway, if we were to say this was a community problem that led to Omar Davis's death, such as the 13-year-old, you couldn't tell me his name, could you, who got killed in Kemp Road on the park, such as the 4-year-old who was just laid to rest over the weekend, who was the victim of a stray bullet as lunatics sought to murder each other in the street. Those are things that I think that the community can look to itself and to the government to address, having safe communities. The compulsion, and again, I'm trying to be very careful because I don't know what happened. The compulsion to stab a man multiple times, literally treat him like trash and put him in a trash bag and put him in the trunk of your car, I'm not smart enough to understand how the community addresses that. And so I don't know what outrage about that will do. So here's how I feel about this. We have to develop people who, firstly, and again, I don't know what happened, seek to not prey upon people. We have to take those people who have already been broken out of circulation in the general population and perform some sort of retraining on them. And we have to also urge people to consider the circumstances in which they're having and raising children. And also foster in people a sense of right and wrong, a sense of live and let live, and not kill or be killed, and take some responsibility for the people that our society is churning out. Other than that, I don't know how you stop someone from having a compulsion to stab someone multiple times and throw them in a trunk. I'm not outraged. I'm just deeply saddened. I'm not outraged because I don't know that anything outside of certain circumstances would have changed this outcome. And it's tragic and it's horrible. And you get a sense of feeling set back because you go, here's a young man came up through the public system. He's on his way to what appear to be great success. And you get a sense of fatalism about it, right? Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's so sad that the outrage is not yet developed. Maybe the stages of grief or I don't even know him. I just knew him through his words. Maybe the stages of grief are different, right? You get a sense of fatalism in that. What do you do? What do you do? We say we want outrage. And I've heard people, wait, why is there no outrage? I don't think people have it left in them. I think we've grown numb. And I've said this before. I don't really have much outrage left. I got to recharge maybe at the end of the year. Children dying, pregnant women being run over by cars. Multiple murders at a time, baby showers getting shot up. What does outrage do? In any event, that's where I am today with Omar Davis Jr. I don't have outrage for you. It's only just deeply saddening. And it makes you feel as though there's no way out, even for the most hardworking, selfless, sacrificial, talented people, because we've raised up a lot of people who just don't see the problem in taking a life. You don't have the authority to take lives. Right? That's left for the state and God to decide. You didn't bring any life into the world. Even if you did, you can't just take it. So Omar Davis is gone, 21 years old. So that's, his life is over, beyond ruined. His family's life is now forever altered. And there's a 20-year-old man who, according to our reports, was his friend who killed him. I don't know what outrage does to fix that. All right. Let's take a little break. We're going to talk about some other things on the other side.
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S.C., 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 J.S. Johnson Insurance.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy?
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name?
Wow, Dred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning a trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I say, I not under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to the revolution here on Guardian Radio. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We're talking about the death of Omar Davis Jr. Again, I won't get into too much of it or too much speculation about it. Because it is now before the courts. A couple of texts, and then I want to talk about a different issue. And it's hard to clear the air after you talk about these. There's so much going on. It says we're all toxic from the food we eat, mold, sugar, both in our food and drink. It's making us all crazy. I suppose, maybe, I don't know. I can't dismiss that it's food, sugar and all, but I mean, again, how do you fix that? We say a lot of things in the hope that it'll do something, you know, not that we actually can guarantee outcomes, right? Because that when we talk about, you hear a lot of this talk that's socialist about equality of outcomes, right? So we want everyone to have a good outcome, and it's nonsense, okay? There's no system you can set up that everyone has an equal outcome, okay? So Thomas Sowell, an economist, black economist, he said that, he famously said, I don't know if you've heard of him, that if you cannot guarantee equality of outcomes among children raised in the same household, in the same circumstances, with the same privileges and the same advantages, how can you expect a society to guarantee an equality of outcomes? So you're never going to get an equality of outcomes across the board, ever. All right? But what you want is systems that give you the opportunity to have equal outcomes. And when you look at Omar Davis and a few others who were at the Ministry of Education scholarship ceremony, you can look at yourself and you go, okay. I have a system that can work. All right. It's challenged, but it can work. And then you look at his death and you throw up your head. You go, well, what hell? Even if I build a system, there's a problem with people. How do you fix the people, right? How do you fix the guy who's going to stab someone he knows to death and discard of his body in one of the most disrespectful ways you could do so, right? Who fixes that, right? And so we say that we want, because we never, again, we're never going to have equality of outcomes. So we say that, okay, we're going to have a suicide prevention hotline, right? And too many people are taking their lives. They don't have people to talk to, X, Y, Z. But then you have people who have talked to people for years, have taken medication for years, have had the opportunity of having insurance, parents who could afford mental health care for them. Still, they take their lives. Still. So it's frustrating, and you're never going to have, again, the exact outcome that you plan you're going to have, right? Nowhere in the world has it. But we could look at how to have better outcomes. This says, Juan, why are we talking about equality when not talking about changing the laws that gives custody to the women 90% of the time? So let's talk about equality. Women have three shelters they can go to, and the man doesn't have any shelter to go to. Where's the equality? I mean, I wouldn't disregard that. That's something to do for consideration. Certainly. But, you know, Omar Davis was raised by his mother and father, according to him, until his father was killed. So, you know, there's a situation where the father's dead. And you would be, I don't know you, but you might be surprised by how many women are raising children, multiple children, and the fathers of these children are dead. or in prison. I'm gonna do another text. I want to talk about some other stuff. Good day. Can you answer this, please? And those 2,000 murders over the course of so many years, what have we as a country, as a people, or as a government did or are doing to stop the killing besides giving passionate speeches? You know, and I told you this before. You can do a lot, but I don't know that we stop this problem of killing without changing laws to deal with ways to help people through incarceration, through therapy, right? Economic opportunity, sure. Absolutely want that. But I witnessed a scene, and this is why I tell you my outrage is kind of spent. And I know that's not what you want to hear. Like, you want me to like refill the pool of outrage so it's fresh, so it can be dynamic, I guess. I witnessed a murder scene where they killed four adults in the house, including three adults in the house, including a pregnant woman 8 months pregnant. Okay. While at least four children were in the house. And that stemmed as a result of a conflict in Haitian Village, and they wanted the guy who allegedly committed the murder in the Haitian Village to come bring himself forward. This is your gangs now. You know, I don't know that they were that well organized at the time. And they told him if he didn't come forward, they're gonna go kill his unborn child. Like, what do you do? As I said, other than as soon as you see these people start wilding, like put them in a system where they can be rehabilitated or brought to some sense, what do you do? Because what you tell me is that we got to fix the economy, right? How do I stop you? How do I fix the economy and stop you, as crazy as you are, right? From how do I instill in you through fixing the economy that you shouldn't kill a woman who's 8 months pregnant? You shouldn't go into her home under the cover of night and kill her in her bed. How does offering you some more opportunity fix that inside of you that is clearly broken? All right? I'm not going to talk out of school here, okay, because it's for the authorities to handle. But I know professional people who are well off and well-to-do who can't live together because they get violent with each other. I've known men, I've known of men, who own businesses, who have money, who have stuff that you and I don't have, who beat their women. I don't know how to fix, I don't know how society fixes people's personal morals. I don't know. And so that's why I'm at a loss, because what you want is outrage to go, what are we doing? Who's doing what? Who's doing? Do what? Do what can I do? I covered a murder where a pregnant woman, you know where the medical place is on the corner of Beatrice Avenue and Prince Charles Drive? I covered a murder there where another pregnant woman was found dead, shot dead. They left her body behind the dumpster. What do we do as a society about that? About people's personal impulses, lack of control, other than institutionalize you and try to reach you that way, other than take you out of an environment as a small child and do something that can bring that under control? Then what are we to do? Since good day one, I don't want to change the trajectory of your show, but can you please put BPL on blast for its lack of communication to the public and power outages? Aries and Carmichael were off from 3 a.m. Yikes. Turned on at 8 a.m. Now off and on again. No updates. Zero zilch. Nothing on their social media platforms. I'm tired of this mess. This heat is unbearable and thousands still work from home. I know they're responding to the revolution. Thank you in advance. All right. I got you. BPL, people in Carmichael Road are in distress. Areas of Carmichael Road, that's a big area. Like, tell me which area. They're in distress. This sun outside, this ain't normal. I'm going to try it in the next hour to talk about the climate debt thing, whatever. If you are a climate change denier, me and you can't have no serious conversation, right? This ain't normal. Okay. Yes, the Earth's climate ebbs and flows. This here ain't normal. When I was a child, right, we had no air condition. Maybe it was more trees around. I don't know. We had no air condition. This a new thing. Y'all have where every house have air condition. We didn't build our, my parents didn't, ours was built in the 70s. Did not build our home with air condition. Didn't need it. When we finally got air conditioned, that's a nighttime thing. That ain't no daytime. And you sat there. And it wasn't this hot. Right? Because my daughter comes to me about 10:30 in the each day. But can we turn the AC on? And normally, I want to be like my parents and be, AC, you lost it. And I go, you know what? I can't take it. I can't. This ain't normal out here. Okay? So, I don't know what to tell you. This ain't normal. I don't know if it's like the pollution or the I don't know what it is. So BPL, don't have these people out here. I rate you, BPL. I don't know what you're going to do moving forward, but I do rate you and I do appreciate that you've maintained through whatever sorcery the BPL fuel charge at 10.5 cents. I think that's going to perhaps we're going to hurt on the other side of that. But hey, I'm with you. So please, help the people in Carmichael. Because this isn't normal out here. This isn't, you can't, be, this isn't sustainable. It says, the MP for Nassau Village said there needs to be more disruption in crime. I'm so lost. Who's the MP for Nassau? I should know this. Who's the MP for Nassau Village? Is Hallie Mutrie's the last one? I have no idea. I have no idea. I should know. Refresh me. Give me like the first name or an initial. No? Okay. I don't know. Sorry, Nassau Village. MP. The speaker, Patricia DeVoe. Is she the MP for Nassau Village? Jamal Strawn. Okay, Jamal Strawn. You got to give me that one, right? You can't fault me for not knowing that. Sorry, Jamal Strawn. You can't fault me for not knowing that one off top today. Jamal Strawn says there needs to be more disruption in crime. Okay, sure, sure thing. Jamal Strawn says there needs to be more disruption in crime. That's fine. No problem. He's what? He's foreign. What is he, a parsec? I don't know. I'm not hating Jamal Strawn. If I don't know who you are after a year in office, that's kind of your fault. I'll be real with you. Okay, so again, and I didn't even talk about this long because we've talked to Boost Academy for a little bit after the, at 1:15 anyway. But again, I think that, you know, the grief, the pain, it's real. I'm not doubting that. I'm not doubting that people go, well, Jesus, if they killed Omar Davis, what's going on? right? The shock that, well, who the hell will shoot up a baby shower? Like, who will shoot up a baby shower? And then y'all come tell me don't talk about taking the lives of young black men and the police shouldn't use lethal force when they're dealing with these people. Whose fault is that? That you will go shoot up a baby shower? Where does economic opportunity and the lack thereof snowball into you shooting up a baby shower? You don't care that if you don't even, if you don't say, look, these big gray dudes who's walking nightmares and I won't get them. There's a pregnant women out there. If we're not going to protect pregnant women in society anymore, let me know so I could check out. I can go get my cabin. I can go get my little place on Luther on the Hill. Let me know if that's not a thing that we're doing anymore, protecting pregnant women. If those are seriously no longer off limits, and this is what the drugs and the alcohol and the bad-mindedness has led you to, if we're really there as a standard, let me know so I can check out, because I can't help you with that. All right? I can't. What conversation am I supposed to have with you that goes, you know, maybe you shouldn't shoot up the place where the pregnant women are? Says Guardian, do you have central AC or ductless units? The Guardian has central AC. I have ductless units, and I got everything. I got inverters. I got the 20, what is it? 24 SEER, everything. I pay extra for it just to say, I think I got to insulate my roof too. We'll see about that. So anyway, if you need me to come tell me, if you need me to come tell you, don't go shoot up the place where the pregnant women are, then I don't know what to tell you. It says, bro, come back to reality. What would you do if someone slaps your toddler child, rapes your wife, and you know who the person is? What if you're madly in love with someone and they just up and leave you? Come back to reality, see for life it was. What if you're madly in love with someone and they just up and leave you? Come back to reality? Tell me. What if you're madly in love with someone and they just up and leave you? What is it that you, help me with that one. What is it that you think is the natural extension of being in love with someone and them leaving you? Where does that go from there? Because that happens every day. So I'm confused by your thing. What if someone slaps your toddler child, rapes your wife, and you know the person who the person is? I mean, I ain't gonna go shoot up the baby shower. What if you're madly in love with someone and they just up and leave you? Yeah, madly, says madly being the operative word. Yeah, you too in love. If the natural extension of that is you go do them something, you too in love. You don't, ain't nobody belong to you. I don't love you no more. Bye out. I in love with someone else. Nah, you know, the circumstances in which you might freak out. If they don't have enough respect for you to tell you that, you know, you could have some passionate thing going on. But if you madly in love with someone and they up and leave you and you go do something to them, then you two in love. I don't know if that's love you're talking about. Women leave men every day. Men leave women every day. Anybody belong to you? I know you think you could go marital rape them, but ain't nobody, you know, got to be with you. Says Juan, I believe your comment is controversial. You said if we can't protect pregnant women, then you're checking out what makes pregnant women above children and men, so their lives are more valuable. What makes pregnant women more valuable than men? Okay, so without pregnant women, we're not going to have any more children who become men or women. You see what I'm saying? Why you protect pregnant women? Because they replenish the supply of humanity? Because pregnant women and unborn children are even more vulnerable than most children who are born alive. That's controversial to you? This is one sounds like you best check out, my brother. Yeah. This is one you just said yourself, you were on the scene of a murdered pregnant woman. What do you mean when we stop protecting women? We never was protecting them. This is the Bahamas. Bro, get real. I don't know what country you and Dwight living in, because the Bahamas been sick. I thought that was a given. Anyway, I guess, you know, equality, you let. You know what? I ain't gonna lie to you. I've seen women go more hardcore with pregnant women than even some men. I was at a bank, and there were like two women behind me, and there was a woman, like 8 months pregnant, standing, who came in the bank, and I knew her. Like, we weren't good friends. And I was like, would you like to come stand in front of me? Because I was closer to the front of the line. Those women in back of me like, she better get in back of this line. I was like, yeah, but she's pregnant. It's like, I have four children. She need to stand on line like me. I say, okay, all right, no problem. I got you. Let me do my banking and leave. All right. We gotta go to news. We'll be back after on the other side.
Anyone interested in managing their personal finances? Sunshine Finance is offering interest-free and payment-free loans. You will be charged 0% interest until January 2023. You can keep all of this year's loan payments up to and including December. This interest-free, payment-free offer is limited to loans booked with Sunshine Finance in August only. If any of this can assist you, contact us at apply@sunshinefinanceltd.com. Sunshine Finance, we're your leader in lending.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
We know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
You do coffee your way.
Double shot, decaf, cappuccino.
Light roast, Colombian, no milk.
You do vacations your way.
Hiking boots, tent, mountains.
Five-star hotels and theater.
And now you can do insurance your way.
Online.
Email.
Chat.
WhatsApp.
Or in branch. For home, car, travel, boat, or business insurance, do it anyway with NUA Insurance agents and brokers. Visit NUAinsurance.com, call, or stop by a branch today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, wait, just a hard day. Wait.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers or you could text them from inside the Croc Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you. And your call goes straight through to Miami. So nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
We'll be right back.
back to the Revolutionary on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. We'll be talking with Boost Academy in a few minutes and go from there. This is, okay. I don't know how we got into. We were talking about protecting pregnant women because y'all just shot up a baby shower where there was a pregnant woman. This is one, please don't take on these woke lunatics. Says, how do you think we get pregnant women? Oh, you mean with the men? I'm not saying women are more important than men. I'm saying, although I could, anyway. I'm saying that you need to protect pregnant women because they're carrying our most valuable resource, which is humanity, right? Juan, your defense is somewhat of a paradox. If we go by your logic, then if there aren't any women to impregnate, any men to impregnate the women, then the population still can't be replenished. So yeah, there may be some logic in stating that male lives have equal value too. No, I didn't say men don't have equal value. I said we need to protect the pregnant women. Let me give you an example. You've heard of Genghis Khan, yes? The conqueror who expanded the Mongolian Empire to probably the largest, one of the largest the world's ever seen, about, maybe 1,000 years ago. My history may be a little choppy. Anyway, I read an article a couple of years ago that said, last year, that said in that region of Asia, they can trace Genghis Khan's direct bloodline to an almost identical match of his bloodline to about 17 million people. Yeah? Genghis Khan. How did that happen? Genghis Khan would take his army, right? And these were his fellows, and raid his neighbors. Then he and his army would go slaughter the men. Those who they didn't feel the need to enslave, right? Kill all the men. They didn't kill the women. However, all the women didn't get to be shared amongst the entire army. Genghis Khan I had so many women that they gave him 40 sons. And Genghis Khan and his 40 sons impregnated thousands and thousands of women while killing their men and still did just fine. You see what I'm saying? So the resource is the pregnant woman. The woman is a resource to replenish the life. One man can impregnate. Anyway, I'm not going to get too much into it. There's a zombie apocalypse scenario that I've workshopped in my head and maybe a little bit on paper where I could repopulate the earth. If I'm the last man. Never seen that show? Why? No? It's a graphic novel. Why the last man? Me one could do it, you know, if I had to. All right. Let me do some more of your text messages. This one, regarding this current commissioner of police, Clayton Fernander, I do firmly believe this man is over his head. In this job of commissioner of police, when he was appointed, I said to myself, please, brave, don't do it. This man even seems unable to speak properly, so I was immediately doubtful. Say what you will about former Commissioner Paul Rule, but at least he communicates like he's educated. I mean, I would say that Clayton Fernander is not as eloquent a speaker as Paul Rowe, but the man just got the job. Give him a chance. Heinous crimes have been happening regardless of the commissioner. Although, I think the effectiveness of the commissioner is a fair game when you do have continued levels of high crime. But he just got the job. Give him a break. All right. Let's see what he can do. Dear one, people shooting up a baby shower need their eyelids raked on nails. Says there's crime in Eleuthera now too, unfortunately. Mostly petty theft of tourists. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, when I was in Harbor Island and I was in North Eleuthera, I didn't feel, however, you know, and again, I don't understand a lot of the tourists. I've never been anywhere on this earth and said to myself, let me leave my door unlocked. Nowhere. Now, that may be because I'm from Nassau and y'all come in your house. If the doors are barricaded, y'all will find, y'all come through the roof. My uncle, Gerald, told me the other day, he's building a wall. And I go, yeah, man, you got to build that as high as possible. He's like, you know, we'll see. He was like, my daddy used to say locks are for honest people. And I thought about that. His father, my grandfather, was a locksmith. And I thought about that and I go, you know, he's right. So locks are for honest people. Locks are for people who go, oh, the door. Even if you have the compulsion to go, let me go in here. Maybe the door's locked. There's something inside you that's got to go, other than there being a dog, cameras, someone with a gun. There's something inside you that goes, oh, the door's locked. Let me go. If you are a thief, if you're a crook, you're going to go in however. You're going to saw the bars off. You're going to go through the roof. You're going to wait for someone to come home with a gun, you know? So I never go anywhere and think, let me just go and leave stuff around. Let me just go and I'm going to leave my credit. When we went to Bahamar, I was like, I need to put my stuff in a safe. My wife is like, oh, who's going to steal? I don't know. Who goes? I don't know who's stealing out anywhere. I got to leave that to chance. I got to leave that to everyone's good moral conscience not to steal my stuff. No, sir. But yeah, that's unfortunate that they're doing that in Eleuthera. All right. Okay, I thought we were going to have Boost Academy. I don't hear them on the line. We're going to, I guess, seek to get them on because they were scheduled to come on today. But we can get into what else I wanted to get into. And I won't get into this entire debt scenario today, but I'm going to get into a bit of what the Prime Minister has been talking about. Okay? So, Prime Minister Philip Davis has been, since probably into the first days after coming to office, really been hammering, banging the drum on climate change and how it affects small island developing states like the Bahamas, right? And I'm with you, Brave Davis. You want to make that your signature issue? You want to segue that into dealing with the carbon credits market? I'm with you. You want to sensitize the world that there are massive amounts of pollution and their huge sprawling cities and endless consumption of resources are leading to the earth getting hotter and the seas rising and weather acting in ways that humanity has not seen on a consistent basis. I'm with you. Go ahead and sound that alarm and make them aware and go tell all the movers and shakers that the very least you can do if you're gonna put us in a position where we're really fleeing for our lives, the very least you could do is give some aid, right? He's asked for debt forgiveness for small island developing states. I'll talk about that in a second. And I support it wholeheartedly, all right? Y'all should forgive a lot of our debt for more reasons than one. But I've noticed a trend, and this isn't singular to Prime Minister Davis. I could just not be remembering, but I didn't hear Ingram talking about this like that while in office. Not in this particular way. But even from Christie, right, with Matthew, I believe it was, and Halkidis too. And I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying I don't buy exact what I'll specifically lay out to you. Even with Christie, we were hearing, okay, hurricane hits. It's a real problem for where we are. Because what happened was Christie, those increased VAT in 2015. I'm sorry, introduced VAT in 2015, all right, January 1. January 1. And the thrust of VAT, again, I was there. I covered it extensively. The thrust of VAT, the push behind VAT was that we're doing too much deficit spending. We have to stop. We have to balance the budget. We have to pay down our debt. I won't get into too much of it, but we always prided ourselves as a country in having a low debt to GDP ratio. We were always around 30%, 35%, under 40 for certain, up until about 2007, and other circumstances happened, and that we borrowed. And here's why I put some real salt on this claim, right? As I'm looking at it. So that was supposed to be to help pay down the debt. Debt grew, all right, under Christie. And one of the main reasons given for that was hurricanes, particularly Matthew. Well, we were on track to hit our revenue target. Matthew happened, closed borders, yada, yada, yada. Couldn't collect the XYZ. The ports were all messed up. All right, so we couldn't really do it. So there's a hurricane. Hurricane, big problem with debt. All right. If there's a hurricane, you know, da, 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 da. And this is why we've been saying you got to bill for shocks. But, you know, we'll talk about that too. So, of course, Minnis came in. And then Irma hit, and that was like, oh, it's Irma just crippled us, when Irma really only impacted a small segment of the population, though you shouldn't neglect them just because it's a small segment of the population. But Irma didn't, like, shut down the engines of the economy, you know? But they started talking about Irma. They had to borrow for Irma, and do, even though they didn't do things for years later. And Dorian hit. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you, well, Dorian wasn't calamitous, all right? Dorian caused a lot of losses that led to businesses couldn't operate. You couldn't collect taxes in Abaco, which was pretty robust. But if you look at the GDP for Abaco and Grand Bahama, what they were saying it was, it doesn't really look like that, according to the National Statistical Institute, what they released about family island GDP, which is the first time I saw them do that, first time I saw the government do that. Dorian hits, then you go, we gotta borrow for Dorian. Okay. Gotcha. Then the pandemic hits. All right, and you gotta borrow for the pandemic. I got you. Debt, you know, piles up because we want to meet our commitments, and we'll talk about those commitments. And so I hear you. You had to borrow for the hurricane stops the revenue. I got you. I can imagine that's very costly. Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. You know, I would note that no hurricane has caused us to borrow at the levels we borrowed for the during the pandemic. And I would also, we're going to talk about that in a moment too. When we talk about necessity versus choice, and you know, you claim necessity when I think you should own your choices, right? So while I question Davis taking as many people as he does to different places to talk about climate change, and if that's a good use of our resources for those size entourages to go, I do question that. I support him telling the world about climate change. I support he can travel, go travel, go tell everybody, go tell everybody, drum a business, get our debt forgiven if you can, go try to figure out the carbon credits market. I'm with you, all right? However, Davis is the first prime minister to repeatedly, as far as I'm aware, repeatedly blame this much of our national debt on climate change, specifically hurricanes. Okay? So Davis contends, and he said this during the budget, he said it, I could name you several places that he said it since then, all right? And he's increased the number. He said that hurricanes between 2015 and 2019 are responsible for half of our national debt. And he said, I'll tell you what he said, right? And I'm going to say this. I challenge him to demonstrate this in numbers, because I can see what loans you owe. So show me where you spent that money on hurricane recovery and mitigation. All right. Oh, we got Boost? Okay. Well, give me a second. We'll do Boost. Let's do Boost now. We'll stick a pin in it. All right. Davis is now saying hurricanes between 2015 and 2019 are responsible for more than 50% of our national debt. Keep in mind, our national debt is over $11 billion. Our national debt, that's just government borrowing and government responsible, not ultimately responsible, but government says, you could sign the loan, government's gonna guarantee it, right? It's over $11 billion. David's saying half of that $11 billion is because of hurricanes that happened between 2015 and 2019. Okay? Let's stick a pin in that. We're going to talk to Boost Academy, and we'll get back to that. And we may address it if we need to as well tomorrow. Okay? Okay. So we're today talking with Charlene Hansen of Boost Academy. And we're going to be talking about back to school and rolling enrollment. Char, good to have you on The Revolution once again.
Good afternoon.
Hope all is well. Okay, so Boost Academy is getting ready to go back to school. Now, when does school start?
So we open our doors September 5th. We do have an orientation date on that Friday before for all of our new students to get their feet wet and learn the ropes. But September 5th is our first day.
Awesome. So what are we looking at with back to school? Are we looking at the same sort of COVID protocols? Are we looking at a more relaxed environment? Are we looking at full enrollment, a virtual scenario? What are we looking at?
Well, the great news is that even throughout the pandemic, we were able to maintain enough distance because we do have very small class sizes and have sufficient space to spread our students out. So we will continue to follow all the COVID protocols as per the guidelines, but hoping for an end to this pandemic soon, because I know there has been a number of students with some learning loss at who have, you know, fallen through the cracks at a lot of other schools, and we want to make sure we can address that in our face-to-face setting.
Yeah, absolutely. I note that the Minister of Education has repeatedly said that that we're really facing a crisis, particularly in Latin America and the Caribbean and in a lot of African countries. How do we catch up is my question, particularly with kids who we've established their developmental milestones. When they miss those, how do we catch back up?
The key thing is really to focus on the math and literacy, because once you can read and comprehend, then the rest of the information will flow. So realistically, we will just focus on that and everything else will follow. We keep strong relationships with parents and we provide our after-school support. Homework help is inclusive of the cost of our school fees. So we just basically, once we take on students' education, we do everything that we can to make sure that they're successful. Hands-on and project-based learning is really a way to capture the engagement of students who have been home on video games and kind of tuning out from that in-person learning as well.
Absolutely. So tell us a bit more about Boost Academy. I know you guys had started this to deliver an alternative to what you would already have seen in education, more personalized, more hands-on. Tell us about the age range. Tell us about what parents can expect from Boost Academy for their children and for themselves.
So we are a grades 4 through 12 school. We're a boutique private school in that we have an 8-to-1 student to staff ratio. And as I mentioned earlier, we take on everything that we need to ensure that a child is successful in our program. So we are, one of our focuses this year is to kind of step into the blockchain world and introduce our students into blockchain and cryptocurrency. So we've been working on some training programs ourselves, as well as implementing a new video series with actually somebody you have had on your show before, Mr. Theo Savousis.
Oh yeah, Theo's brilliant.
Yeah, so he's been working with us on a cryptocurrency course that we're going to be delivering to our high school students this year. And, you know, with FTX coming here and all of the other big cryptocurrency ventures, looks like this is going to be the next big thing to hit the Bahamas, and we want to make sure our students are well prepared for future careers.
Absolutely. So tell us about rolling enrollment. What does that entail?
So basically, as long as we are able to, as long as we have space in our classrooms, we are able to take students on throughout the year. We understand that sometimes people move midway or have various challenges, and so we accept students throughout the summer, throughout the school year as necessary. And we do have some spaces still available for this fall, and we just are looking to see which bright minds can fill them.
Well, that's excellent. I'm really hoping that Boost Academy can get back to business. I know you guys did a lot of work to just try to accommodate students during the pandemic because you'd really understood the value of education. I've spoken at one of your matriculation ceremonies. I know that you develop a really close relationship with your students and develop them so that you can bring them over the hump, and you've had some great results. Where can parents go to find out more about Boost Academy?
You can learn more at www.boostbahamas.com, or you can set up a face-to-face meeting with me at any point. The number at the school is 676-8043 or 676-8044. We are on all social media channels at Boost Bahamas. You can search Boost Academy and we will come up. But yes, we definitely have had some great success stories over the years, and it's just wonderful to see that the little school that started out on Soldier Road moved over to Montrose Avenue. We are continuing to do big things and continuing to grow and develop, and I'm personally very excited for the school year ahead.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds great. Give us the website again and give us the numbers. We can shout out to you and the email address too, please.
All right. It is www.boostbahamas.com, B-O-O-S-T, Bahamas.com, 676-8043 or 676-8044. Or you can email info@boostbahamas.com or check us out on any social media pages. Do the at symbol Boost Bahamas.
Excellent. I would really encourage parents who are looking for more personalized attention for their kids to check out Boost Academy. It is a great school, and I know, Shar, you're extremely passionate and well-versed in educating children, and so I would encourage them to go check it out, certainly.
Thank you.
It's been great talking to you again. Great hearing from you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right, that's Charlene Hansen with Boost Academy. I encourage you to check it out, very much so. I'm not just saying that. If I didn't know about it, I'd just go, oh. But they're really on top of things. over there. And sometimes your child's not thriving in an environment where they may need that extra attention, where the pandemic occurred and there was some loss and they're not really where they need to be, really consider Boost. They're going to do everything they can to get your child straightened out, certainly. All right. We're going to take a little break here and we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about this debt issue, as well as, I see some of these texts. They're talking about pregnant women. Are y'all stuck on pregnant? Yeesh. Anyway, okay. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Opa! Burger King Nassau is bringing you the fresh Greek flavors you love done the BK way. Come and enjoy the new Greek Whopper with a delicious combination of tzatziki sauce, feta cheese, red onions, and refreshing cucumber on our signature flame-grilled patty. Or go Greek with a plant-based Whopper or crispy chicken sandwich. All three delicious sandwiches are topped off with lettuce and tomato and made the Burger King way. Bring your friends and experience the Greek Whopper lineup at BK Nassau, where taste is king.
For 25 years, Advantage Insurance has provided coverage for your most prized possessions, offering insurance plans to cover your vehicle, home, business, and boat with customized options that work with your budget. Now, Advantage says thank you to all our loyal customers and business partners over the past 25 years. Call 356-0285 or visit Advantage Insurance on Collins Avenue today when every dollar counts. Count on Advantage. Celebrating 25 years of service.
Gentlemen, welcome back to the revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Good to have you with us. We'll finish the debt thing in a moment. Let me see. All right, bye. The fact that you want to protect pregnant women proves there's no such thing as equality, plus America, so there's no such thing as a woman or gender.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm back. See what I get for helping you? My electricity just went on. I have a generator because this isn't my first rodeo, right? I don't mind telling you, I had to borrow money to pay for it, but I sure did, and it's paid off. That's what I get for saying something to BPL about you guys, on your guys' behalf. I'm on my cell phone at the moment. Okay, so let me go through your text messages. Right, okay. It says, however, I'm glad only you seem to have that opinion of pregnant women being gods. I guess you can keep that opinion. I mean, okay. Fair enough. I think you should protect pregnant women. I don't know what to tell you. I can't apologize to you. I see the value in making sure you protect pregnant women so that we can replenish the earth with children. I don't know. This says your argument is moot because one man can't take care of thousands of women and women don't want one man. Your argument doesn't make any sense. One man can't take care of thousands. Hey. Speak for you and your manhood. This is, but at least the COP has the audacity to update family members on the progress of their investigation in regards to the murder of their loved ones. Yeah, I mean, if, you know, that Clayton Fernander, you know, isn't your cup of tea in terms of delivery of speech, I don't think it makes him less qualified to be commissioner. I think you should speak. I don't have a problem with Fernander's grasp of the English language. I don't have a problem with Fernander at all. I think it's his dialect you kind of may have a problem with. Dialect, is that right? Accent? But if you're Bahamian, you're going to understand it. It says, Juan, you made repopulation of the earth sound like not a lot of work. No, it's work. You got to, you know, come on. There's going to be attrition. You're going to have disease, right? You're going to have people get sick. It's going to be a consistent level of work. Look how long it took Abraham. Juan, be honest, we were better off under the UBP British. Or would you say we're doing great where we are today? We were better off under the UBP. Hold on. Let me think. I wonder if you had my grandfather, who was under the UBP, who couldn't go to school beyond the fourth grade. If we were better off under the UBP. You could ask my grandmother, who, like brave Davis's people, were subsistence farmers, but these were on Eleuthera, who had to come to New Providence, had no electricity, no phone, no running water, all right? Had to come to New Providence to survive, had 10 children, almost all of whom got a university education after the UBP came out of power. You should ask them how they feel about, should we still be under the UBP? So I say no. This we that you're imagining, we're not better off under the UBP. Okay. Now, we're going to not get as thoroughly through this debt thing that I want to, but we're going to go. Say, weren't we debt-free under the UBP? Yeah. For certain. We were debt-free under the UBP. No doubt under the UBP. Now, you couldn't get proper medical care under the UBP because we were debt-free, for sure. We didn't have a proper port system under the UBP, but you could be that with debt-free. We didn't have a functioning education system, as I said, for beyond the fourth grade under the UBP. And we didn't have electricity for the vast majority of even New Providence, let alone the Family Islands under UBP. And so when you don't have to build a nation, you don't necessarily have to incur debt. When you only consider the needs of the few. I don't know if that's what you want. All right. Now, if you're talking about the moral fabric of society, in terms of crime, et cetera, we could discuss what was different then about what's different now. This says, Juan, you're so smart. Hey, thanks. I thought the same thing on the hurricanes being a big cost of the debt. Show me what monies were spent. That's why we need complete transparency. That's why complete transparency is needed. Government financial statements, it's the people's money. So show them how and what you spent it on. Okay, great. So let's segue back into that, right? So you're telling me that 50% of our national debt is due to hurricanes between 2015 and 2019. All right. Now, I said that. That's what the Prime Minister, Minister of Finance, said. And I will quote him so that we're not mistaken. This is the Concordia's America Summit 2022 took place in July in Florida. The Prime Minister said at this summit, quote, I can say unequivocally that more than 50% of my national debt today is a direct result of the consequences of climate change. Adaptation and mitigation, we have to borrow to recover, borrow to bring back the country to normalcy. Okay, and so 50% is due to consequences of climate change, all right? He said in July. At the opening plenary session of the Caribbean Regional Heads of Government meeting in preparation for the United Nations Climate Change Conference of the Parties 27, otherwise known as COP27, last Tuesday, August 16th, my birthday, on New Providence, the Prime Minister said, and I quote, here in the Bahamas, we undertook an exercise which revealed that more than 50% of our outstanding debt can be linked to the impacts of the hurricanes which descended on us between 2015 and 2019. Our countries are struggling with debts accumulated by climate disaster, the Prime Minister said on Saturday at the first ever International Convention of the Grand Boulé. When, quote, when in a profiling of my national debt, 50% or more of it is connected directly to climate change, the consequence of climate change, because we have to borrow money for the purpose of recovery, resilience, to get back to normalcy. Okay, no doubt. So he's saying 50% of the debt. So what was the national debt in 2015? National debt in 2015, fiscal year, let me see if I got my thing right here, was about $5.5 billion. The national debt now is somewhere around or above $11.5 billion. Okay? So we're talking about $6 billion. Okay? So the vast majority of the $5 billion that was borrowed between, oh, let's just say 1973 and 2015, and had nothing to do with no climate change, right? Right? Bahamas, let me hear you. Correct? Okay? The vast majority of the money you borrowed since 2015 doesn't have anything to do with climate change. If that is the case, then you're gonna have to tell me what BAMSI has to do with recovery from climate change. If this is the case, the more than 50% of the money you borrowed is for the effects of climate change, then explain to me what Chester Cooper says is over $200 million spent on the Grand Lucayan. What does that have to do with climate change? What is the more than $100 million over the past 5 years, in fact, it may be more than $100 million, that you spent on Bahamas Air of our taxpayer dollars that you borrowed for have to do with climate change? What is your subsidization of the Water and Sewage Corporation and the Bahamas Electricity Corporation over these many years? Let's just say from 2015, what does that have to do with climate change? Because you built more fuel burning engines, if I'm not mistaken. What is our subsidization of the pension funds, et cetera, of the Bahamas Telecommunications Corporation? The Bahamas Electricity Corporation, what does that have to do with climate change? What is the non-contributory pension system of the government of the Bahamas that you've kept in place for over 50 years, for 50 years. What does that have to do with climate change? What is the $50 million baseball stadium have to do with climate change? What did the food program and the several hundred million dollars, I believe, that they spent on that, what's that got to do with climate change with the, from the pandemic that you say was largely wasted? What does your increased travel budget have to do with climate change other than you want to spread the message of climate change? What does the increased public relations budget have to do with climate change? What did you say it was? $15 million over budget in parks and beaches contracts. What did that have to do with climate change? What do all the people that you employ with government, the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that you continue to have employed, even when they were home, during the pandemic, what did that have to do with climate change? Because if I'm not mistaken, that's where you spent the vast majority of your money. Salaries, emoluments, contracts, subsidization of government-owned and government-affiliated entities and pet projects. That's where you spent your money. And I know I don't have to be the one to tell this to you. The people you borrowed this money from, they know that. They can go right on the government website and read the budget. So to me, unless you can substantiate this, and you very well may be able to, unless you can show me with hard data that it really is the case that over $5 billion of our national debt, $6 billion of our national debt, around $6 billion of our national debt is due to the mitigation of climate change effects and not the choices that you make. Not that you are forced to make the choices that you make as government. Tell me what that has to do with climate change. I'd love to know. So unless you can substantiate that, I would stop saying that. Because I don't know that anyone's looking at it with any sort of clear eyes and taking that seriously. I think that sounds like a good thing to say, but I don't think you need to say that to have the world understand that we are being impacted by climate change through no fault of our own. And we're going to get wiped out way before you guys are wiped out. And you need to help us. And the way you can help us is we're not asking something for nothing. We have commodities such as a carbon sink that we could trade on. It's a complex process. It may take years to develop, but it's worth looking at. We want to look at the carbon credits market. We want to look at debt forgiveness because at the end of the day, we're not the ones contributing. All the Bahamians all day could go burn all their AC, run all their cars, burn all the fuel in the boats riding around the Bahamas. All day, every day, all the Bahamians could do it, each and every one of us. And it still won't be us that's impacting the Bahamas more so than other large countries are impacting the Bahamas. So I don't think it's a strong argument to go that you guys should really do something about climate change because half the money we borrowed is to mitigate climate change, because I don't think that's the case. All right? That sort of claim demands to be substantiated. And I think when you say that in front of the other Caribbean countries that know better, I haven't heard Mia Motley say it. Maybe she'll come up there and say half of Barbados debt is due to mitigation of climate change. Really? And not social programs? and not a massive investment in education that has led you into a balance of payments problem that has caused you to enter into an IMF structured agreement? Really? I want to hear Andrew Holness, and they'll all have to give evidence to me. I want to hear Andrew Holness go up in front of these world conferences and go, yep, half the debt Jamaica's undertaken has been for climate change mitigation. It doesn't make any sense. That's just is what it is. That particular claim, I don't think helps us. I think there's much, much, much more we could demonstrate in terms of the vast amount of research we have about the impact of climate change in our environment, in terms of just what we see in terms of what has happened with Dorian, et cetera, that says that we cannot continue along this route without help from the rest of the world. And if you listen to some, if you watch the panel from the Boulay conference, you'd hear PJ Patterson talking about what the Caribbean should do to really deal with the demand of skilled labor from the Caribbean. Because this thing with nurses and teachers, et cetera, that's not something that's unique to the Bahamas. In fact, according to a recent report, we're the least impacted as a Caribbean country by it. But to me, to talk about this in those terms, I don't think makes sense, particularly. And I don't have time to get into it today. Maybe Lan will get into it today, particularly when we see the concern that's playing out in the international financial markets over the Bahamas debt situation. Now, Rothschild & Co., the government is engaged, has said, you know, there's no doomsday scenario right up and now, but the Bahamas needs to go on a diet from international lending. Right, and I'm with him. The level of international lending is concerning. All right, but we can do debt forgiveness. We can do all this. We can ask development loans. We can ask people to help us clear up. But we're not going to get away with saying that half the money we borrowed for our national debt is due to mitigation of climate change. Then explain to me what was the almost $300 million, let's ballpark at 250. How was the almost $250 million spent on the New Providence Road Improvement Project a climate change issue? I need to know. I'd love to know. How is the subsidization of the Bahamas Mortgage Corporation a climate change issue? The Bahamas Development Bank subsidization, how is that a climate change issue? The taking on of debt from multi-million dollar loans in terms of resolve through special purpose vehicles, how is that a mitigation of climate change issue? We can't just spend money on what we say are things that we want and that we choose to do conscientiously as a government and then blame it on factors outside of our control. These are choices we're making. And I think we have to own our choices. And the things that are up to us, we have to take responsibility and accountability for. And the things that are not up to us, certainly, we should ask those who are causing it to help us with it. But we borrowed this money, and we don't look like we're being serious when we say more than half of it is due to climate change mitigation. If you're telling me that and then you're asking me to forgive it because that's the reason, I'm going to go back through my books and go, I guess, man, but a lot of this you borrowed for like new police cars. You know, I hear you, but didn't you borrow $200 million for Defense Force boats? You know, I hear what you're saying, but I beg to differ. All right. So again, that needs some substantiation. And I fully support the Prime Minister in his thrust for climate change accountability and for debt forgiveness and all this stuff like that. I just don't think that part is helpful. And I think that people are going to start to notice because you're saying it a lot in front of everybody and you haven't substantiated it yet. Maybe you can substantiate it. And if you can, I will come on here and say, here's what it is. And I was wrong. This is exactly where it is with that. All right.
But it's like that $1 billion in the pre-election report. You ain't got to go through all that for us to look at minutes them and go, yeah, they weren't making sense. All right, we got to get out of here. Shivargo Lang is up next with Z Live Off the Record. You guys take care out there and have a great day, Bahamas. Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow.